Hello, welcome to Journey of the Monkey King, a chapter-by-chapter discussion of Journey to the West. I'm Quiva, and I'm joined by my friend MJ.
Hello!
Hey, and today we are going through Chapter 12. So, at the end of the last chapter, the Kings of the Underworld realized that Li Qilian had died prematurely, and seeing as the Emperor's sister Yu Ying was about to die anyway, they might as well put her earthly body to good use and just put Li's soul into it.
Fair enough. Waste not, what not?
Yeah.
There's a body going, you know.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, it's cool, as long as it's not like actively decomposing due to a clerical error.
Yeah. So, some maidservants see Yu Ying collapse while walking in the gardens of the palace, and rush to report she's died. Emperor Taizong hears the news. He sighs, but he knew that this was going to happen. The kings of the underworld warned him in advance. When he arrives in the garden to see her, he sees that she started breathing again, but she has no idea where she is or who anyone here is, and she keeps shouting for her husband. And also she says her name is Li Qilian. So that's a bit odd.
Little bit.
Hmm.
She's had a bit of a funny turn.
Yeah, so she explains the entire story to Taizong about how she died, and about her husband, Louis Quan, came with the pumpkins that Taizong sacrificed to the kings of the dead who reunited them. Explains all that.
Aww.
You know, including all the references to things that Taizong knows happened. So anyway, Taizong turns away from her to his servants and says, "Ah, the poor dear's hit her head, bring her inside and get her some medicine," and then walks off.
Fair enough.
She knows about the pumpkins! Surely that's,
it's a bit of a dick move. But I guess, you know, he got his, right? He's back to life, fuck the rest of them. She's just the pumpkin wench. I don't know, I was gonna say, you know, maybe he's maddened with, or in denial about grief, because, you know, obviously he doesn't want his sister to die. And then I remember he fucking murdered his two brothers.
Yeah.
And his dad has been living in fear of him, apparently. So, yeah, I'm very much...
No, his dad is dead at this point as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, prior to this. Not a nice man. Not a very nice man, indeed.
So, when he returns to court, Louis Quan is waiting outside, alive, having brought the pumpkins. Taizong is startled, but he asks them how the pumpkins went down. And, you know, it went quite well. The kings were very happy. But Quan mentions his wife and how Yama decided to send them both back. And the penny finally drops for Taizong, and he asks exactly what Yama said about Quan's wife. And he said that Yama said something about the royal sister, the Yu Ying, but he doesn't know what royal sister means, or who Yu Ying is, or where to look for this person.
Awkward. So
they forgot to explain that.
Yeah, that feels like a bit of an oversight.
Yeah. So, Taizong sends for Qilian, who is in Yu Ying's room, and she's busy screaming that she's not going to take any fucking medicine, and where the fuck is she? This is not her house. Her house is clean, not this gaudy place. Yellow as if it's fucking jaundiced.
I like her. I like her a lot. Good for her. You know, it's just kind of like, no, I'm not taking your bullshit. Don't tell me I'm hysterical. And by the way, who decorated this gas? I love that. I love that. So love that for her.
So it takes... five women and three eunuchs to drag her out and bring her out to the court. And Taizong finally properly reunites Quan and Qilian. And when she sees him, she asks him, "Why didn't he wait for her when they were leaving the afterlife? I tripped and fell, and I was surrounded by all these people talking nonsense. What do you have to say for yourself?"
There, I mean, he is. We've established that he is an abusive piece of shit, right?
Yeah, no. He was fucking awful to her.
Yeah, yeah. I like to think she's just at the end of her goddamn tether now, and who would blame her? You know, it's a long goddamn walk back from the afterlife, even if you're not injured, and now these people are telling her to calm down? Bitch, no!
Quan is speechless, hearing this from a woman he doesn't actually recognize at all. But it's fine, and Taizong gives them all of his sister's jewelry, clothes, and toiletries, and grants Quan a permanent exception from conscription before sending them home. So, you know, at least she got a bunch of nice new clothes that will actually fit her.
Nice.
And that jewelry is probably worth, more than the town they live in.
And easily hideable. we gotta, yeah, because, I mean, if you're in ye old times and your husband's a piece of shit, you want very valuable jewelry that you can flog. Hopefully, if you run the fuck away. She doesn't run the fuck away, though, does she?
This is the last they're mentioned, so.
In that case, I like to think she took that valuable jewelry, flogged it, and ran the fuck away, and got her own very tastefully decorated house somewhere nice.
I think I forgot to mention at any point, but they do have two children.
I hope she takes the kids.
Which is also... let's not get into that.
He just died, and he's just like... The kids are the... Because he didn't know he was going
to
come back.
That's what I was about to say. I was going to kind of move on to not get too arresting, but yeah, he was like intentionally orphaning his two children.
Take the jewelry, take the kids, run away, get a nice place, nice small place you can decorate good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish her only the best. She deserves it.
In the meantime, an official named Yuqi Gong was traveling to Henan to replay Xiang Liang, his room full of gold and silver that the emperor borrowed in the afterlife. So, Liang makes his living selling water, which is not an occupation I expected to exist in the period this story was written in.
No, but okay.
Yeah, and his wife sells pottery.
Well, you have something to put the water in then.
It's true.
You get a 2-for-1. Very, very sensible.
They sell bottled water.
Yep.
It's potted and potable.
Hey.
So they only keep enough money to live on, and give all the rest as alms or sacrifice it by exchanging it for paper money and burning it, which is how they built up such a fortune in the afterlife.
Literally burning money? It doesn't sound like sound financial management. Imagine Eddie Hobbs would have something to say about it. What happened to him?
The economy crashed.
Yeah, wasn't he around for a bit after? I don't know. Don't burn money. Don't burn more money than you can afford, I guess.
Yeah. But as you might expect, people who live like that are taken a bit aback when an imperial officer shows up to their door, telling them the emperor is giving them several tons of gold because he borrowed their ghost money after he died.
Yeah. That's gotta be a shock.
Yeah. And they're not the kind of people who would take it anyway.
Tell me, they take the money.
No, they don't. They adamantly refuse to take the money.
The money!
No, they completely and utterly refuse it. So eventually the decision is made to use the cash to build a new temple, and in it a shrine dedicated to the two Xiangs. And the temple is named the Xiang Guo Temple.
I mean, I imagine that, I'm not sure what the afterlife exchange rate is, but I imagine it's a sound investment.
Yeah, and I mean that. I think if you're working on the whole afterlife economy thing, the temple with a shrine dedicated to them to mean that they will get a steady stream of sacrifices to them that way.
It's passive income, really.
They have become ghost landlords.
Oh. I'm still upset about the ghost rant.
Yeah, no, that's a reasonable thing to be upset about, especially at the moment.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, no, I'm trying not to, 'cause this is obviously deeply held spiritual beliefs that are no more, you know, that are no less valid than my own. But ghost rent. I don't want to pay rent when I die. Don't make me pay ghost rent.
I will definitely not charge you rent in the afterlife, I promise you. I can't speak for
Yeah,
anyone else.
I
So all that dealt with, Taizong calls for a grand mass of land and water for the orphan souls trapped in the region of darkness. He sends out a notice across the empire for it. So I think a grand mass of land and water is just like a Like it's a term that exists outside of this novel for a specific type of thing. It's not something I researched that much, but there's some footnotes about it. So a court historian named Fu Yi is told to select a priest to lead the ceremonies, but instead he's actually dead set against the idea, and he writes a letter condemning Buddhism as a foreign religion, and says the ancient great kings didn't have any fucking Buddha, and we don't need one either.
a strong position to take.
Yeah, so especially when you've just been ordered to like select a priest for the massive mass that the emperor wants to hold.
Yeah. I mean the emperor he's a touchy dude, as we have established. I mean, this is a ballsy move on this guy's part.
So, Prime Minister Zhao Yu takes up the debate against Fu Yi, defending Buddhism as a force for good. So, Fu Yi says that the root of prosperity is loyalty to one's parents and then to one's ruler, but Buddha turned his back on his family, and he thinks that kind of that's turning your back on your family is kind of inherent to Buddhism, and he thinks that priests and nuns should be made to marry.
Made to marry?
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the option. You know, I mean, I'm coming from a place where, you know, most of my favorite priests are married. You know, I feel like it's a good way to, if you're so inclined, understand the lives of your flock. But forced married, a little bit.
I think it's more coming from the idea that, in general, everyone is, it's a general society in general where, everyone is kind of expected to be married.
True. Or he may be saying that they just don't fuck enough.
Yeah, well, I think it's more like, yeah, they shouldn't be kind of exempt and be kind of allowed for this kind of celibacy to be seen as acceptable.
Yeah, again, because he's taken some strong positions.
Yeah, so Zhao Yu responds by telling him that hell was created for men like you.
Hell was created. Ooh.
It's a bit of a
Quiba,
response.
is there a poetry battle coming up? Are we about to see a rap battle?
No, shockingly, there's no poetry in this section.
Weird.
So Taizong calls in two more officials, the Lord High Chamberlain Zhang Dao Yuan, and the president of the Grand Secretariat, Zhang Shiheng, to weigh in on it. And they both come out in favor of Buddhism. And they think that all three religions, Confucianism, Taoism, and Buddhism, should all be honored and none of them should be like abolished or censored.
Fair. That's a very progressive position to take.
So Taizong agrees with this, and he says that from this point forward, anyone who tries to denounce Buddhism will have their arms broken.
That is a less progressive position to take. Okay. Just Buddhism or any of the others?
Just Buddhism.
Okay. Okay.
So the next day, court officials choose a monk named Xuanzang to leave the mass. Yeah, he's finally back.
Okay, where you been, man? Where you been? How's he doing?
He's good. He's seen as a great candidate. He, as well as being an illustrious monk, he's very well connected.
Yeah.
His dad and his granddad are both high-ranking civil servants, so.
Oh, bag of civil service off this novel, definitely.
So he's given the title of Grand Expositor of the Faith, Supreme Vicar of Priests.
So I'm at work, because I have a day job because comedy doesn't pay me anything and there's a plague, and I'm at work. It's the middle of the day. My mother texts me asking, "Am I done work yet?" I go, "No, it's 2 p.m." She says, "Call me immediately when you're done." And I'm there going, "Oh fuck, what's going on?" So in my head, I've got like death, illness, acts of God, the house is on fire, an asteroid has hit directly into my aunt's head. I'm going nuts. I ring her up and I ask what the hell's going on, and she went, "I want you to apply for this civil service job."
Okay.
It's just like, great.
Was
That
she just like, you need to do this, there's a, you'll get a pension, etc.
yeah, that was literally it. But there was an executive officer position, which apparently very rarely comes up, and she saw it, and this is because like most other places in the world under late stage capitalism, which we've established, I am not a fan of. Most civil service contracts these days are temp roles. This is your classic permanent pensionable. But it was just like in the middle of my work day, at
Yeah.
the job that I actually have, you make me run out in a panic to tell me you want me to apply for this job.
Did
Like, cool.
you apply for us?
Yes, I did actually. I got through to the second round, but I'm still pissed off.
How many eight-legged essays did you have to write for the second round?
I haven't actually looked at that yet. It's not the assessment isn't due to till next Tuesday, but I will let you know if I have to write any spider essays, or any poetry or calligraphy or anything of that nature.
I mean, you'd probably be good at that, so hopefully.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. It's not an art form I am acutely familiar with, but we'll give it a go. We'll give it a go. And if it doesn't work out, I'll just drop out and write one of the world's most influential novels, because apparently that's how that works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just make sure it has plenty of magic monkeys.
Oh, I don't know about the monkeys now. I'm thinking maybe a magic toucan.
Toucan. Very
Yes, a
fancy.
magic toucan. Yeah, from Galway. Magic toucan from Galway.
Okay, I'm just writing this down so I can steal
You're gonna cut all of this out, and then your
it
best-selling novel is gonna come out
later.
in a year's time, and I'll be just like, Quava, why have you done this to me?
You're very generous about how long it takes me to write anything. I'll let you know when I finish writing anything, that I've
Okay,
tried to.
so this will just help me get a move on, and we'll have to see who finishes the Magic Toucan book first.
Yeah.
But you heard it here, folks. The next great literary classic is going to be about a toucan from Galway named Dave.
Anyway. So Xia Zhang is appointed head of this mass. He gets fitted out with a nice new gold robe, and he gathers 1,200 monks to the Temple of Transformation, where the Grand Mass of Land and Water is held, and it's going to last for 49 days. Yeah, it's
Whoa.
a long fucking thing.
Jesus. That's actually famously in South Kilkenny, where I used to live, a lot of people would drive an extra 15 minutes to New Ross so they could go to the mass that let out 15 minutes early.
Yeah, no,
Yeah.
there's always one faster priest around somewhere.
Yeah, you got to get your speed priest.
Meanwhile, Guanyin is still with Moxa in the city, posing as monks, trying to find their pilgrim to head to India. The next bit is a bit repetitive, so I kind of streamlined it a little bit, but basically, when the minister Zhao Yu is heading home from court, she stands in the middle of the road and blocks him, and then convinces him that the cassock and staff would be great for Xuanzang to use for the mass, and he arranges an audience with the throne. So
okay.
She says that the cassock costs 5,000 taels of silver, and the staff is 2,000, but for a virtuous person, they're free.
Okay, well, she's kind of putting her money where her mouth is as regards the spirituality of the thing, and I can't help but respect that. But how do you prove you're a virtuous person? Are we about to find out?
I think she just decides whether you are or not.
Yeah, you look all right.
Yeah. She tells Taizong that if a good person wears it, they will be protected from harm. 10,000 gods will salute you. 7 Buddhas will follow you, etc., etc. It's quite a grand sales pitch. Taizong accepts it, and she gives it for free, as long as it goes to Xuanzang. And he gets the coat, and he wears it for the first kind of big ceremony, 7 days into the mass. So there's kind of 7 big ceremonies every 7 days, basically.
Yeah, you don't want to burn out too fast.
Yeah. So
gotta give yourself some resting time between pre.
So during that mass, as Xuanzang is delivering lectures from the pulpit, Guanyin, still disguised as a traveling monk, walks up and starts slapping the platform, shouting, "Hey, monk, you only talk about the teachings of the little vehicle. You don't know anything about the great vehicle." Vehicle is a kind of a odd sounding translation, but it's yana. It means like a spiritual practice. I think the idea is that it's like, it is a thing that will like bring you to enlightenment, and therefore it's a vehicle.
Interesting.
It's an odd translation.
Yeah, it's sort of like a chariot of knowledge, yeah. I guess.
I do not know enough about Buddhism and the terminology to
I should really look some of that up.
Any further guess? I should too, but who has the fucking time? So anyway, Guanyin tells Xuanzang that his vehicle is shit. Only the great vehicle can save the damned and bring people to Nirvana. So Taizong gets wind that the ceremony was interrupted by 2 random monks shouting at this like fucking head priest, and has Guanyin and Moxa arrested. So Guanyin is brought in front of the throne again, but Taizong recognizes her as the monk that gave him the magic robes, so he softens up a bit, and he asks her why she wanted to interrupt the lecture. And she explains again the importance of the great vehicle, the Tripitaka. And Taizong asks, where are these scriptures? And she says it's with Buddha at the great temple of Thunderclap in the great western heaven in India. And
okay,
Taizong is happy to offer her to let her give a lecture of the part she knows off the top of her head. With this, she kind of takes that as a cue to finally reveal her true form as a god and rises into the air. And Taizong and all the officers of the court immediately kneel down and start chanting Namo Bodhisattva Guan Xiyin. Namo means I submit to.
It seems like, knowing what we know of this god, it's that seems like a good idea.
Yeah.
I'd submit to her immediately, and I don't say that about a lot of women.
So, Taizong summons the painter Wu Daozi to draw the true form of Guanyin, and after this, he orders the mass to be stopped so summoning can instead be sent to India to get these Tripitaka scriptures. Because if they're teaching shitty bullshit, they should just stop and wait till they have the proper stuff.
Seems reasonable-ish. I don't see how that's going to work out in practice, but...
So Xuanzang immediately volunteers. And Tai Zong is so impressed with him, he declares Xuan Zhang his Bond brother and bows to him 4 times. And Xuan Zhang swears that he will not return until he has the true scriptures, even if it kills him. He'd rather fall into eternal perdition than fail. So
okay,
he goes back to his temple to meet with his fellow monks and his disciples, and he tells them about his mission. He says to wait for 2 or 3 years, or maybe 6 or 7 years. And if they see branches of the pine trees within the temple grounds pointing eastwards, then they know he will be about to return. And otherwise he won't be coming back.
It does kind of seem like that could happen with a strong wind, though.
So the next day, Tai Zong writes up a formal document stating Xuan Zhang's mission and granting him free passage. It's more or less a passport. I will just call it a passport from now on. The translation calls it a travel rescript. He also gives Xuan Zhang an alms bowl made of purple gold to beg with, and 2 attendants and a horse. I'm not sure I would give money to someone begging with a bowl made of solid gold, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
I'm not one to be, you know, one of those pricks being like, oh, why does, if he has an iPhone, why he's, how could a homeless person have an iPhone? Like, I'm not going to give him any money. But, like, a solid gold bowl.
If you saw someone begging with a solid gold bowl, though, would you immediately go, oh, that's solid gold, or would you think it's fake?
Fair point. So, Tai Zong sees Xuan Zhang off at the city gate. As they're about to depart, he lifts up a cup of wine to toast, and he asked Xuan Zhang what his by name is to toast to. Not entirely sure what by name means in this context. There's no, you know, footnote for it, but, you know, from context, I suppose it's some kind of title that you use for formal occasions. But Xuan Zhang says that monks generally don't take on such things. But Tai Zong ignores this and decides to grant him one anyway, and calls him Tripitaka after the scriptures he's looking for. So, and from now on, I'm going to call him Tripitaka. It's what he's called for most of the book. And I think from now on, if I'm talking about the real person, if we want to talk about him again, the real person is Xuan Zhang. The fictional character is Tripitaka.
That makes sense. I'm on board with that.
Okay, cool. Tripitaka thanks him, and he takes the wine, but he says he can't drink it. Being a monk, he's also, you know, sworn off, that sort of thing.
That's fair.
But Tai Zong says today is not an ordinary event, and begs him to have just one cup of dietary wine, which is a phrase that is used throughout the book, and I am not sure if it means, like, non-alcoholic wine or just vegetarian wine.
If someone says they don't want to drink, just move on.
He's the emperor. He doesn't listen to people saying no. So Tripitaka goes along with it. He's about to drink the cup when Tai Zong bends down and just pinches up a little bit of dirt and sprinkles it into the drink so that Tripitaka can, you know, take a bit of home with him when he goes off.
Okay, yep, that's just pour it right into the nearest bush.
So with that little gesture, Tripitaka thanks him again, and drains his cup before finally heading out, and the journey to the west finally actually starting.
Woo! Moving right along. Sorry, I've Muppets in my head now for some reason. So that is the chapter.
That is the chapter, yeah. The journey to the west has finally started.
Yay!
So what do you think of what it took to get here?
I mean, that is a lot of background.
Yeah.
That is an awful lot of background. We went on some tangents from characters that we will never see again, but I'm glad to have known most of them.
Speaking of, there's a couple of things and people mentioned in this chapter who actually existed again. So,
oh, cool.
Do you want to have a guess as to which parts were real?
The emperor existed.
Yeah, well.
I am guessing maybe that the bottled water selling couple are real, and that maybe the temple that was referred to actually exists.
So the temple is real. The couple, I don't believe, are. They make it makes kind of a just so story for the temple.
Yeah, that's fair.
So it's a real temple, and it sort of still exists. It's been rebuilt several times. It was built before Taizong was born, though. It was built by Emperor Wen Juan of the Northern Qi Dynasty.
Okay.
So Taizong gets a bunch of credit for stuff that did not happen when he was emperor in this chapter. So one of the other things was the argument between Fu Yi and Zhao Yu about Buddhism was an actual thing that happened too. Both of those two people were real. But it happened under Taizong's father, Gao Zu. And interesting, in the real debate, Fu Yi, the guy attacking Buddhism, was considered the winner, and Gao Zu put a bunch of restrictions on Buddhist temples.
Wow, okay. That's a serious rewrite of history.
Yeah. And the last thing is the painter that was just really briefly mentioned, painting the picture of the true form of Guan Yin, was a real painter, Wu Daozi. So he... Again, he lived after Taizong. So the temple was before Taizong. The debate was Taizong's father's reign, and then the painter was after his reign. Though he did actually paint a couple of portraits of Guan Yin, or at least I found some on Wikimedia Commons credited to him. I didn't do any more research than that.
That is fair. I'm glad the artist got a cameo, because artists are important. They're important. It's an important part of society.
Yeah.
Possibly more important than, restaurants. Just saying.
Probably more important than pubs getting to pretend to be restaurants to stay open while just acting as pubs.
Yeah. But, fuck the arts, right?
I mean, that's certainly what most governments seem to think.
Yep.
So then, I think what's interesting then is, not counting Chapter 9, because again, that was probably added in later, this is actually Tripitaka's first appearance.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's his first appearance as Tripitaka anyway.
Yeah. And so... There's a poem to introduce him, and it goes through a lot of the same details that are in Chapter 9 of kind of his life story and his background, just, obviously in a lot less detail. And there's one discrepancy between the poem and that chapter, though, which is that the name of the monk or the name of the abbot in the monastery he grew up in was given in the poem as Queen Anne rather than Fa Ming, which was what he was named in the chapter. Otherwise it's largely the same. So someone possibly at some point just decided to take kind of that poem and a couple of details and possibly information from other stories about Xuanzang and put them into a full chapter out by itself. The other contradiction, of course, being the fact that that chapter says that it starts in the 13th year of Taizong's reign, which this chapter also takes place in.
Timeline.
Presumably, Tripitaka was not conceived, born, aged 18 years, and made head monk in this ceremony all within 1 year.
I don't know. He seems a bit of an overachiever. But... I would agree that it is unlikely, yes.
He's also given so many fucking titles in this chapter. As well as Xuanzang and Tripitaka, there is Gold Cicada, Child River Float, Grand Expositor of the Faith, Supreme Vicar of Priests, the Master of the Law, and the Great Expositor Priest.
That's a set of titles.
Yeah, all within this one chapter.
Oh dear.
He does have another bit of backstory. It's kind of referenced in that poem in this chapter, but not completely explained on. And I can't remember when it's fully explained. I think it takes a while, but I think I'll just say it now because I think there's any real reason to put it off, and it's interesting. So he is also a reincarnation of a god who was... That's where the title Gold Cicada is from. That was his name in a previous life. And he was a disciple of Buddha directly. He's kind of reincarnated as a human and being made to go on this pilgrimage because he fell asleep during one of Buddha's lectures.
It seems excessive, but I'm also wondering what a gold cicada would sound like.
Loud.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
So yeah, that's chapter 12. I think the maybe not the last big setup chapter, but
we're on our way.
Yeah, we're leaving the capital. We're kind of leaving the historical characters behind.
Yay!
Moving on to a new section.
Moving right along. Yep. Woo!
You excited to finally head west?
So excited. Absolutely. Really pumped.
So that will be in the next chapter. In the Den of Tigers, the Gold Star brings deliverance. At Double Fork Ridge, Boquin detains the monk.
A detention already. The suspense!
The suspense. Find out the what suspense. Boquin is up to next time on Dragon Ball Z.
Woo!
Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Bye. Bye. Bye.